Do you have a vision with anarchy?
I was just going to ask that question.
What's your vision with anarchy? Like, in an ideal world?
There's no ideal world. That's the problem. It's not a utopian system.
What's your vision? What's your vision with anarchy?
My vision is a situation where more people are responsible for their own lives.
Which we have today.
I said more people.
Okay.
More people are responsible. I don't think we have that today at all. More people are responsible for their own lives. There's less of a reliance on corporate news sources. There's less respect for the university system. And there's an increasing amount of absolute contempt, if not levels of hatred, toward government and government officials.
I think we have all of those that we're making progress on today.
I don't agree.
I would easily sell it to you. I think Biden will go down in the history books, at least out of all the presidents that we've had, as the guy that drove more homeschooling than any other president in the history of mankind.
That's
so
true.
I think we're making progress.
Well, that was Trump. That was COVID.
It's not Trump. It's COVID.
It was not either of them.
But it's COVID Biden because of what's going on with, you know, pushing these education. And even DeSantis, I would also say, was the spokesperson to drive people to consider saying, I'm either going to do private school, I'm either going to leave the state, or I'm going to do homeschooling. I think it's a combination of COVID, Biden, DeSantis together are driving that. So
that's true.
That's progress. Next one, the data that's coming out that says in K through 12 schools, 99% of health teachers gave money to the Democratic Party, 97% of English teachers gave money to a Democratic Party, and 87 out of 100 math and science teachers gave their money to Democratic Party. That means they got a monopoly on that mindset that they're teaching the kids. And for every 13 professor or 12 professor that's a Democrat, one of them is a Republican. So these numbers are coming out and people are saying, that's not cool. So you're either going to create a university or I'm going to do online schooling. I don't even want my kids to go to college. Why would I want to send my kids to college? People are making decisions. We're making progress.
Progress,
and then
yes.
Social media, you know, mainstream media, I think it's very obvious. Can you realize Jeff Zucker got fired when? When did Jeff Zucker get fired?
Less than a year ago.
Now, what's going on with Chris Licht, where he's at? What's going on with Chris Licht? He's either just got fired or is about to get fired, right?
Is he really?
He's in a deep, you know, he's not in a good place. If you pull up Chris Licht about to be fired. So mainstream media, when Russell Brand goes on Bill Maher and annihilates an MSNBC guy to his face to the point where Bill Maher gets uncomfortable, we're making a lot of progress. When a number one guy that's pushing back on mainstream media is a former UFC, not a UFC, former fighter and, you know, actor, Fear Factor shows, and he's putting people in their place where they can't go around, you know, saying, hey, you better get vaccinated or else this. And all of a sudden people are saying, well, I kind of like what he's talking about. What is this about ivermectin? I think the progress is being made. Does that mean that's we're leaning towards anarchy? No, it just means we're making progress. Because if on 100 different issues, if we wrote on a piece of paper, an anarchy, a libertarian, a capitalist, we may agree on 77 different things or 78 different things or 82 different things. And then you may disagree with you on 4 different things. You say, no, that's right. Libertarian, no, Dave, you know, Dave Smith, no, give us like this. But you know what? There's a lot of things that we all want to see have progress happen. I think we're making it. Do we want to have a big government the way we do today? No. Do we want to see them printing money the way they're doing today? No. I think they're being exposed by both sides. Does that give credibility to the anarchy argument? I don't know about that.
I don't agree with most of what you just said, but let me break down a few points where I disagree with. First of all, I don't think there's such a thing as big government. There's only government you approve of. Any government that is big enough to impose its will upon you will be regarded by you as a big government. And if a government is so small that the night watchman state where you could drown in a bathtub, then it's not in a position to impose any kind of weak law and order regardless. So there's no coherent argument for minarchism, number one. Second, I don't think it's at all accurate, and I'm friends with Joe, I've been on his show several times, to regard his amount of influence or amount how much he's trusted is in any way comparable to the New York Times or to someone who's a law professor at Yale. These are, to me, still night and day. I don't think at all there is a view of both sides, if you mean like Republican and Democrat or liberal or conservative, that they regard the state as illegitimate. There is no incentive and no move in Washington, let's just take from the conservative perspective, to shrink the size of government by $1. You had Trump and 2 years of a Republican congressional majority. There wasn't even an attempt to abolish a single government agency, let alone to shrink the size of the government. So this idea that if you want to be kind of have a libertarian perspective and say people are realizing government's too big, even if people are realizing this, DeSantis didn't shrink the government at all. I think he grew it even faster than his predecessor. So in terms of, you know, 77 out of 100 things, if you and I both have the exact same vision of a house we buy, what we want to look like, and you want to sell it and I want to move in, we do not have the same goal, even if we have the same vision.
Yeah, but in your world, it's your way or the highway, Michael. And that's very hard, because the way you sell your ideas, our conversation started off when I asked you and you said, well, you know, my book is ranked number 3 on anarchism and da 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 da. On Amazon. And you say, I'm making progress. Great. All I'm saying is progress. Progress. I didn't say it's happening. I'm giving your point back to you. We're making progress. Joe is making progress. Joe is not New York Times. We all know how big New York Times is. It's massive. It's a behemoth. But we're making progress. Elon Musk buying Twitter, it's progress. All of these things are progress. We are making a lot of progress towards the concept of freedom of speech and people questioning things they didn't question before, because we're all collectively getting smarter and saying, this shit just doesn't make sense.
We're not getting smarter. We're getting more informed. I'm going to be pedantic on that because that's important, because I don't think people are necessarily getting smarter, but we have more access to information. That is crucial. And that's what brought down the Soviet Union. But again, I think you're kind of mixing up several things. You asked me earlier why, you know, anarchism.
I'm not mixing up anything. I'm just telling you we're making progress. And just like you're saying, the argument of anarchy is making progress, I think collectively, more people are informed today, whatever definition you want to give it, informed or smarter, more people are informed today to realize this shit doesn't work. We're unifying. When a Bill Maher, what are we talking about? Like Russell Brand? Are you kidding me? Like when Bill Maher and Russell Brand and Joe Rogan, who endorsed Bernie Sanders a couple years ago, when they're coming up and they're saying, here's where we are, nobody in a million years could have guessed this was going to happen. Okay. The weirdest people are unifying today, which I believe is major progress. But go ahead.
You were asking earlier why anarchism isn't more popular, right? And I was giving you examples of, A, we're making progress on that issue. Mm-hmm. And one concrete objective, as opposed to my personal feelings, is the fact that the book hit number 3 on Amazon. So I agree with you that we're making progress in terms of both understanding the nature of the state and the power elite, and also more specifically in terms of promoting anarchism as an ideology. Point being, I'm not a utopian, right? So even if I had, for example, a magic wand and marijuana...
But you are, though. You are a bit of a utopian. And by the way, Michael, let me manage something with you. In a conversation that's 2 hours, I may jump in and interrupt.
That's fine.
If it makes you uncomfortable, it's going to happen 50 more times.
I understand that.
If you interrupt me, I'm fully comfortable. You're not going to offend me. I'm a big boy, and I'm expecting you to be a big boy as well.
I'm a very little boy.
Perfect. That's totally fine. Okay. Yeah, totally fine.
And I should be in my bed.
Yeah, you should be in your bed, and you chose to be here.
I'm not a utopian, and I do not appreciate being called a utopian. Because what I was about to say is, if all that happens is drugs become legalized, that's nowhere close to an anarchist society. I'm not going to say, fuck you, that win doesn't count. That's a huge win. If people aren't put in jail for illegitimate reasons, I will take that as a goal. I will accept it and celebrate it. The reason I wrote this book, The White Pill, was about the fall of the Soviet Union. The people in Russia, Ukraine, Romania, they're not living in some utopia. Things just got significantly better for them. And that is important for those of us who fight for freedom. You take the wins you can get. And you don't say, oh, well, they still have this law or they still have that law. No, you go, look, things in our lifetime, in places that are not some weird country that you can't find the map, moved fundamentally, enormously, in a better direction, and they did it relatively peacefully and relatively easily. And that, to your point, which I agree with, it is something that is important for those of us to stay motivated who fight for freedom. So that this is why I think the anarchism question in this context is a bit of a distraction. You don't have to believe in anarchism to still fight for freedom and to work with me and other people who think like you and to take the wins when you have them.
Yeah, so what I like about, competition is if your ideas are great, you're going to attract good people. You'll attract money. People will come to you. If you don't, you're going to lose good people, okay? At this table, his family's from Canada. Tom doesn't live in Canada, right? You were born in Ukraine.
Yes.
You don't live in Ukraine.
Correct.
You're here.
Yes.
You live in Buffalo, New York.
Yes, right.
I was
Sunny Buffalo.
Sunny Buffalo. By the way, that's a joke. He's in Austin, and you know,
which is sunny.
Yes, I was born in Iran. Okay, I live in U.S. Adam's family's from Israel.
Well, I'm Jewish, but my family's Ashkenazi Jews from Russia.
Okay, there you go. Shalom. Ashkenazi Jew from Russia. He grew up in Miami. Family chose to come here.
Okay.
If in a split second, U.S. all of a sudden came up with shitty ideas and it kept going the way it was, I don't think you have kids. I got four of them. And I know you're a legacy guy because you said that in the first
few minutes. What do you mean a legacy?
Like you want to make an impact. You want to, yeah. So for me, if climate got bad and it was to the point where I'm being forced to do something I don't want to do, I'm either going to run for office. I'm either going to make money to have a platform. I'm going to speak up. I'm going to write a book like you're saying. Here's what I believe in and people have to read it and see where it's at. Or I'm going to say, you know what? I'm going to go raise my kids in Singapore. I'm going to go to Belize. I'm going to go chill. You know what? Here's what we're going to be doing. We're going to go to XYZ. I think the world would be a very weird place if we all, 100% of us, believed in the same exact thing. It would be quite boring. So a part of the fact that you're talking about this, you're forcing the rest of us to question our arguments. And we're sitting there saying, well, you know what? He seems confident in this. He seems confident in that. Where's the leak in the argument here? So to wrap this part up before we go into current events, Rob, I'm going to pull up this. I'll give you the final thoughts, and then we'll go into current events. So can you pull up what our friends at ChatGPT said about anarchy? This is very important. Zoom in because some of us can't. Okay, there you go. Let's see the question first because it's important. Michael knows. What is the definition of anarchy? Anarchy is a political philosophy or system that advocates for the abolition of government, centralized authority, and the hierarchical organization of society. Anarchists believe that individuals should be free to govern themselves and make decisions collectively without the need for ruling class or state apparatus. Anarchy emphasizes the importance of individual freedom, direct democracy, or volunteer association, as opposed to the use of force or coercion. It is important to note that anarchy is not synonymous with chaos or lawlessness, as anarchists often propose alternative forms of social organization and dispute resolution.
Right.
How do you feel about
like
that?
You like what he says?
Are you okay with that?
I am okay with that. I'm just going to make one more point. I don't need 100% of people to agree with me at all. I don't have an opinion on how Macy's should have their refund policy. I understand that this is Macy's.
They're not doing it right. They should take shots. It's offensive, honestly. Michael, let's not go that far. I'm not willing to go that far.
Point being, there's lots of issues. This is why I'm against democracy. There's lots of issues where most of us shouldn't have an opinion because it's not our business.
I have one simple question. That everything you're saying is great. You know, you're saying sort of a low-level conversation. You know, it works. But we live on Earth. We all have to live in a country.
Sure.
And we have to live by
which
that
is a recent development,
rules.
Historical development.
That we live on Earth?
No, that everyone is a member of one country or another.
Okay, got it. But we are in modern times. Sure. So we're not going back to biblical times.
Listen.
So everything you're saying is great. That's amazing. Relationships, police, everything. I guess what country is closest to even coming close to implementing any of this anarcho types of philosophy? Is there any country that even comes close?
And I'll ask this question, but I'll strike country so that you don't pick on that.
Right.
Is there some place or some group or something on Earth that comes close?
It not just comes close, it is practiced all the time whenever any people work together voluntarily towards a common goal. So it's not a location. It's not a certain type of government. So it's not like you say, it's not like you're going to say, well, America has an anarchist government. That's not how it works. Whenever you have peace, freedom, and interrelationships with people on a voluntary basis, that is anarchism you put into practice. And where on Earth? Whenever anyone uses cuisine, whenever one does mathematics, whenever people use music internationally, all these things, fashion. These are all examples of international, historic anarchist
Michael,
systems.
You're driving these guys insane. They want you to give them the country so they can move there. I don't know
I'm
why you're
trying to get the hell out of here, Michael, and you just want to fucking play
just
games.
Just name
with
the
my
damn
heart.
Country,
fine.
Michael.
Fine, Israel.
Israel.
There you go.
Israel.
All right, let's go into current events. Let's go into current events. Let's go into current events. Tom, give us an update on what's going on with Silicon Valley and Credit Suisse, because a bunch of stuff came out just yesterday. You saw their stock at the beginning. The Dow was down 600, and then it ended up a couple hundred down. What's going on with the markets right now?
Well, speaking of utopia, overnight, it's very interesting. This can be summed up in one chart. Do you have the chart that came from Apollo? So this very interesting chart that comes out assessing the balance sheet risk of the banks. Yeah, can you pop that up?
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And the arrow up there that's toward the left side is pointing to Silicon Valley Bank. Everything to the right of Silicon Valley Bank is actually more risky and slightly worse off than the Silicon Valley Bank balance sheet was. And then if you go all the way to the left, you've got at a score of 15, JP Morgan showing strength, prudence, and, you know, probably, you know, the utopia banking experience there because it's risky. So what overnight has happened is that there is the realization that there is a lot of risk at a lot of banks. That's happened overnight. Right before the market closed, First Republic, remember they said that was the other bank everybody was concerned about. It has been downgraded and officially given the rating as junk. And Moody's came out and said, you're not pinning this on us. We're just going to say the whole sector is downgraded. And they downgraded the entire sector to like this questionable status. And so right now, literally, Pat, what we are waiting for, the markets to show us market response to the stocks of the public banks and waiting for the other shoe to drop. Because it's not just New York and it's not just SVP and it's not just First Republic. It's Credit Suisse yesterday morning coming out saying with a stock price of $2.44. So they're down the street from being delisted. I mean, they're not far away. I think it's 90 cents for so many days and something. They would be, you know, put on a suspension and then ultimately delisted. So what's going on is there's a huge amount of uncertainty, Pat, and there's big amount of uncertainty that no one can have an opinion on. Can I show you a poll real fast?
Of course.
About what is the Fed going to do in the face of all this madness? And I put a poll on Twitter yesterday. So here's 326 votes. Do you think, and I asked a very just sensible, straightforward question. Okay, consumer price index shows inflation's about 6.5 for the year. Still a problem. And with the SVB collapse, what do you think Jerome Powell will do with interest rates when he announces them next week on the 21st, 22nd? Half a point as expected, a quarter point and be a little more gentle, or zero and then revisit it on May 2nd, which is the next scheduled official meeting of the Fed. Look how close it was. 41% said he's going to, you know, just do a quarter point, and 32% said a half a point, 26%. For most of the life of the poll, and this is 326 votes, and these are public people, not a bunch of banking industry folks, you know, it stayed pretty even, which means everybody actually wasn't very sure. So we're going to find out next week, and we're watching and waiting each day, along with getting more realization, Pat, that a lot of banks have very weak balance sheets right now, and there's a lot of turmoil in the sector.
But by the way, when's the last time Moody's downgraded an entire sector the way they just
did? Yeah, that's
specifically
crazy.
Banking, right?
No, and I'm not exaggerating. That's what they did yesterday before the market closed. They said, okay, we're downgrading the sector.
When's the last time? Have you heard of that before? Was it like a, because it's 9/11 wasn't a sector. Like it wasn't like you're going to, you know, 9/11 was. So it makes you think. Yesterday I'm talking to the folks at Morgan Stanley. I'm like, so what's going on? He says, look, you can't raise 450 bibs in 12 months and not expect these banks to go through what they're going through right now. So, but here's the question. The question becomes the following. Okay, Janet Yellen, you guys bailed out those, you know, however many people at Silicon Valley Bank with above $250,000 FDIC. So we're not bailing out Silicon Valley Bank, we're bailing out the depositors is what we're doing. Okay, fine. No problem.
Bank's going to fail, going to get sold, but we're helping the people.
Okay, no problem. Great. How many more can you handle? One more?
Right.
Five more?
It's dominoes.
10 more? 20 more? Like, you know, I had a friend of mine. He started making, he was the top interior designer in Hollywood. He was making 1.6 every year, and I'm his advisor. He's sitting with me. I'm doing a needs analysis. I said, so tell me your expenses. How much you have in savings? I got around $500,000. Okay. How much you have in 401k? Zero. How much you have in stocks? Zero. You only have $500,000? Yes. How long have you been making $1.5 million? About a decade. I said, what's your mortgage payment? Mortgage payment is $15,000 a month. Okay. What's your car payment? I got that SL500, $2,000 a month. What's that? Okay, great.
Yeah, where's the money going?
Where's the money going? So watch what he says. He says, I give my mom $10,000 a month. I give my dad $10,000 a month. And my mom asked me to help his sister out, my auntie. I give her $8,000 a month. And I give my dad's brother now $8,000 a month. He was giving his family $40,000 every month.
Oh, my God.
You know what ended up happening? Eventually.
The government failed?
Well, 08 happens. Once 08 took place, he goes from 1.6 to $200,000 a year, okay?
Yeah, there's no more interiors to design.
So I'm like, so what are you doing
now?
All
the houses are done.
He's the government and he fails.
He had to make four phone calls. What are those four phone calls?
To his mom, his dad, the sister, the brother, all that.
He was the most hated man in the family. I can't believe you're doing this. I'm 80 years old. I'm da-da-da-da-da. Here's the problem. You can make one company happy, Silicon Valley Bank. You can make two, Signature, maybe three. Dude, you can, if this shit hits the fan and 20 banks smaller than Silicon Valley Bank that secretly are sitting here saying, don't expose us. And on top of that, they have a target of money being pulled out. How much did B of A just get? B of A, the number.
$15 billion.
$15 billion in Silicon Valley Bank fails. JP Morgan claims they got $2 billion. How many more banks after seeing something like this are saying, babe, let's take our money out? If this thing goes next level,
right,
it's going to be a scary, scary side. Janet Yellen and Biden can seem noble doing this, but these guys, very soon they're going to have to say no to somebody, and it's going to hurt.
And the rich will just get richer with these big banks. They're all just going to go to Wells. See, they're going to go to Citi. They're going to go to Chase. They're going to Bank of America.
It's
going to be four big banks at that point.
The interior designer should have just made one phone call and then blamed it on that one person. Just, it's mom's fault that I can't pay the rest of you.
It's the wife. You got to say, honestly, my wife wants to leave me.
But
if
Moody's
I do
downgrading
this.
An entire sector. I mean, my brother and sister and I got out of hand. My mom got Moody and downgraded all of us, but I've never seen Moody's downgrade an entire industrial sector.
And then,
I'm sure someone's going to be in the super chat and tell us. And by the way, if you know it, put it in the super chat and let us know, because I honestly don't recall.
There's the problem of perception become reality, right? If there's less of a belief that these banks are stable, that's going to encourage more and more people to have a run, and then it becomes this kind of dominant
thing. That's even worse. That's even worse.
And that was the run they tried to prevent. You're correct. They tried to they wanted to prevent anarchy from happening. And so what they said was,
the government usually does.
We're going to protect. We're going to peck the depositors, so please don't run on the banks.
Yeah.
So it was like they took $25 billion out there to prevent a trillion. That was the play.
And then it just becomes what? A self-fulfilling prophecy where it's just like, no, this is happening. And then
I'm glad my money's in crypto.
Yeah, that's worked 100%. Out well for the last year.
Not 100%, but yeah.
You can't be serious, Michael Malice.
What do you
mean? Glad your money's in crypto.
I am right now. Of course I am.
Yeah.
Right now?
Yeah.
What about over the last year where it's gone down 70%?
I bought low, kept it, I hodled it, then it went down. It's still there. I'm not going to sell it when it goes down.
I will tell you, and I'm not a pro-Bitcoin or an anti-Bitcoin guy. Like, I'm not, during the entire, hey, can you do a sponsorship for FTX? We've never done it because I'm not, that's not my world.
Sure.
So we've never taken a sponsorship from any crypto guys, and we've got a lot of requests. Kind of like how you say, I'm not educated enough on the Ukraine to give it. I'm not a crypto guy to say, hey, here's what we're doing with this. But I will tell you this. If I am a Bitcoin guy, your argument right now is getting stronger. Okay? That's why Bitcoin went up 20% in a day. Went from 20 to 24,000 the other day. This is a very good time for the pro-Bitcoin folks to be selling what they're selling. There is the only challenge they have right now is the following is, my concern's always been, we've had Michael Saylor on a few times, and we've had a bunch of these guys. My only concern's always been that these guys are going to want to regulate. So the whole CBDC, they come out there, try to regulate the crypto community. what that's going to look like. And they're going to use this crisis to say, you know, what if this happens to crypto? What if this happens to this? They're going to figure out a way to regulate that. If they don't, I think Bitcoin's a good place to be if they don't get their hands on it. But again, we'll see what's going to happen there.
All the DeFi guys are out there saying, see, told you.
Yeah. No, by the way, exactly. Pump. They should. They should say it. This is a time to say your argument. If gold pops, Peter Schiff should come out and say, I told you so. I told you so, right? It should be able to.
My big concern is that at some point, maybe you're right, that they're going to have to be like, all right, we got to stop the contagion, bail it out, and then you have to get inflationary as a consequence. That's on top of the inflation that's already happened. And what that ends up screwing over is the poorest of the poor. So that is really my concern here.
We're on the same page there.
100%.
They're going to want to get their hands on it. So let's talk a little bit about reparations, San Francisco. I'm sure you're a big supporter of this. So San Francisco, to consider $5 million reparation check for black citizens, and it's actually, they're getting pretty close to it, are considering a draft plan for a reparation package that would pay $5 million lump sum payments to eligible black residents, in addition to eliminating personal debt and tax burdens and providing guaranteed annual income of at least $97,000 for 250 years. To an undermined number of black guys. I'm a little bit flabbergasted. Let me read that one more time.
Undetermined
tax burdens and providing guaranteed annual incomes of at least $97,000 for 250 years. The plan also proposes allowing black families to purchase homes in expensive cities for just a dollar. Critics have slammed the proposal as financially impossible, with one estimate suggesting it could cost the city roughly $50 billion. And another suggesting that each non-black family in the city would have to pay at least $600,000. However, proponents argue that $5 million figure is actually low when considering the harm caused to black community. The state of California is also considering some reparations proposal that would cut $360,000 checks for every eligible black citizen.
So the state of California, can I point something out? So yesterday I was reading, and this is very interesting. When did California abolish slavery in California?
They never had slavery.
That's correct. Yeah. That was a trick question. And then I looked back at all the other states that actually had legalized slavery, Massachusetts, Connecticut. It was really shocking. California has never had slavery. So even going back into California history to say, well, at this point, we really feel the state, you know, was not acting and had done this and had these laws. No. So how does the state offer reparations for something that actually historically it never actually did?
See, you're thinking 2022. It's 2023, and it's not reparations for slavery. It's reparations for racism. So they're talking about California had like discrimination. What did they have? Those covenant clauses in a contract. Like if I sold you a house, both Dianne Feinstein and Michael Huffington, when they ran against each other for Senate, I think it was in 94, it turned out they had a house that had a clause that says, I will never in perpetuity sell this house to an African-American. And people ignore them, but they're still in the books. So this is paying for all of that. And the point is, it's never going to end. And the point of reparations, right? Pat, you burn down my house, you give me the value of my house and some cost, you know, suffering, then I have reparations. I'm restored back to zero. The point of reparations is once it's resolved, you move on. But does anyone seriously think that if this actually happens, that it's like, okay, racism is done and we're going to move on as society and people are going to stop complaining about racism in California? Of course not. I'm in favor of this. Because the faster California gets driven into the ground and the more of a kind of a understanding that, you know, government is just basically a shakedown system, the better it'll be for everyone.
But how does it work? Because it's San Francisco, so it's a city. So it's not the state, right? So
they'll figure it out. Level. Oh, they'll figure it out.
Yeah.
They just tried to ban 3D printers in all of California.
For what? Yeah.
Because the law says, I don't know if they passed it yet, but if any object is used primarily or largely to 3D print guns, it's going to be they're trying to ban it in California.
Can you find that article?
Yeah, look up 3D printing guns.
There it is.
California.
It's right there. I just saw it. Go the fourth one. Yeah, California passes new 3D. That's 26. That's an older one. Yeah, if you can find a newer one.
It was just in the last couple of weeks.
It's pretty wild to be thinking about this $5 million. So you know what it makes me think about? When I was talking to Roland Martin, and Roland said, I grew up in this community, and I'm like, okay. And what happened? I left. Why'd you leave the community? Everybody left. I don't understand. If you really want to help the community, why are you leaving the community? Well, because everybody else left. So anyways, he'll respond to this on Twitter with some kind of a link and file. And I like it when he does that because it allows me to go and look up a few other things. But what's going to happen if they can buy expensive homes for a dollar? Okay? So you mean to tell me they can go buy homes, expensive homes, at a dollar, and they're going to get $5 million and 97 grand over how many years?
250?
250 years. Man, if they're going to live 250 years, that's respect. Right, if you got that kind of
but not necessarily. If inflation, like 5 years, 97,000 is going to be worth like a soda.
Yeah, but if you think about that, then here's a perfect case study for people that are going to say, "Well, I can't believe you." If they do this, you're actually right. If they do this, just to see what happens as a case study, it's a great case study for everybody else. Let's see what happens. I'm actually really curious what happens.
Oh yeah,
go for it. Do it. Give them the money. Let's move forward. Let's see what happens to San Francisco. Let's see if San Francisco becomes a better city. Let's see if it becomes more vibrant. Let's see if more business owners want to move to San Francisco. If it does, then guess what? We officially have a case study. If it doesn't, you also officially have a case study that it doesn't work.
I think we maybe have some, I agree with that. And I think we have some mini case studies out there. When you take a look at Mega Lotto winners and what they do, they effectively allow their relatives to buy a house for a dollar because they just give it to them. And when you take a look at also athletes of all diversities and all backgrounds, you take an athlete that's suddenly given this monstrous contract when they get drafted by the NBA and the NFL. Remember, hockey and baseball, you have this rookie contract that goes 5 years, as you know, Pat. But then you've got the sports where you just walk in the door and you've won the lotto, right? Because you're one of the top three kids coming out of college, and there you go. And then you buy a house for your mom, and you give a car to your brother, and you give house to your sister. Go take a look at the condition of those assets, and go take a look how they care for them.
I'm telling you.
We have little mini case studies that follow exactly what you're showing. People will not take care of it.
I want to see it, though. I'm
oh, I want to see it.
I want everyone
else
to see it.
Yes or no?
America to see it and say it. This thing works.
I want
to
see it.
See, we figured it out.
Let me actually
put something out. We have unity in the house.
They say right here.
Wait, can I say one more thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
The Chinese were enormously oppressed in California. So they're going to be next in this list. And they have more of a reason historically with California than the African Americans do.
So reparations for them as well.
Am I wrong?
What a noble request.
Does it not make more sense for them?
Sure.
There were all these laws.
That was my question, is the slippery slope effect of here? Because right here it says...
Why don't you throw Iranians in there?
There you go.
Who used to live in California and go there for vacation, now live in Florida. I think we should figure something out there.
Where's your check?
Iranians, only Americans know about oppression. If you watch the corporate press, you and I, our families, we don't know about oppression. No one left the elevator when we stepped
very
in.
Very healthy upbringing, you know.
It was nice. Everyone had a party.
Peaceful.
Adam, just clear your throat real loud and go for it.
Rosewater ice cream.
Well, it's a slippery slope effect. So it says it's going to cost the city roughly $50 billion. So let's say, you know, you're a white guy, you're an Asian guy, you're a Latin guy, whatever. You're an Iranian guy. And you're like, yeah, all right, cool. I agree. Maybe this is something they should do. Let's, you know, make right the sins of our forefathers. All right. So let's say you do agree with this. Okay, great. But by the way, part of this is each non-black family in the city would have to pay at least $600,000. So hold on. So as a white guy, all right, maybe you can make the argument, all right, well, you're not black, your forefathers were maybe the oppressors, all right, it's time for you to pay. All right, well, now the Mexicans got to pay, though? The Asians got to pay? The Native Americans got to pay? Like, where does it end? Like, how do you determine who ends up paying? So if it's only, if it's all non-black residents, so now we're all paying, so my family just moved here 4 years ago or 40 years ago from Mexico, I have to pay? For some, it's just like, where does this end?
Politics isn't about logic or reason. It's about power. And that is kind of central to anarchist thought. So what you're saying makes logical sense. But again, this isn't even about reparations in the sense of reparations of making people whole. This is simply basically a cash grab and a way to kind of get a voting block in place in perpetuity, quite obviously.
But if you're going for a voting block, you already have the vote. This is liberal city as it gets, San Francisco.
This also appeals to Karen because white liberal women love stuff. Am I wrong? Love stuff
Let
like
me
this.
Tell
Fuck
you.
Karen.
I'm going to tell you right now. I'm telling you right now, Adam, I want to see this happen.
Oh, yes.
I'm for it as well. This I want to see it happen. And you know who else I want to see duplicate this? New York City.
This is
do it, baby.
I want San Fran to do it, New York City to do it, Chicago to do it, LA to do it. Do it. Let's see what happens.
This is why I donated money to John Fetterman. I want to see and he's my candidate for president. I want to see this happen. The faster the Senate becomes Arkham Asylum, the better it is for everybody.
You just want to
that's
see the country
cool.
burn.
By the way,
I'm serious.
There's a part of it that's funny, but there's a part of it that honestly, for me, we have a relative, and I'll tell you what, this guy was a very prominent figure on TV, okay? Very, in the Persian community. And at the tail end of his career, he had a stroke. And the family was okay with people coming and visiting him. And there's no way he would ever want people to come and see him in a condition like that. It was horrible, if you know what I'm talking about. And the son was not okay with this. Like, this is not cool for this to be happening. I'm totally, I can't say anything. I'm a nobody in the family to say, hey, guys, what are you doing here? Sure. They have to make the decision. If something like that happened to you and I, and if my wife put me into public, I'd be waiting for her in heaven for her to show up and say, what were you thinking? Allow me to be in public. Fetterman's family and Democrats to just put him up front like that to say, well, he's great, he's this, he's that. That's a form of abuse, what they did to that guy.
He could acquit at any time. You're removing agency from him. He has aphasia. He's not literally like Terry Schiavo, brain dead.
Yeah.
And this guy's entire life has been seeking political power. This is the monkey's paw, right? It's like you have a genie's wish. It's like, I wish I was senator. It's like, all right, but it's going to cost you. He's like, I don't care. And now I'm hoping for the day when some on the Senate floor, when his head just explodes and covers 99 other senators with brain parts, blood, and skull bits.
You would want to see that.
Oh, desperately.
Well, you are an anarchist. There you go. You
just I'm an American.
Yeah.
Like every American worth his salt wants to see a senator's head, just like JFK, head explode out of nowhere.
You just took it to a whole different level.
Oh, it is
your game just went to a whole different level. Okay, let's talk about something else. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about a little bit of I don't know if you heard of this guy. They both live in from this one state called Florida. One guy's name is Ron. The other one's Donald. I don't know if you're following this very close to it.
Yes, I know. Okay. Yes.
And they're
Don
both
and Ron.
Very competitive. Yes. Very competitive. So, CNN
the
poll.
Most competitive. No one's ever been this competitive.
Not at all. Most competitive.
I don't say it. Other people do.
Okay. So, CNN poll, Michael. So, obviously, these guys know what they're talking about. So, CNN poll, most Republicans care more about picking a 2024 GOP nominee who agrees with them on issues than one who can beat Biden. Okay? So, this poll shows that only 30% of Republicans and Republican-leaning independents believe that the country's best days are still ahead of it. This represents a significant shift from 2019 when 77% of Republicans were optimistic. When asked about the 2024 GOP nomination, 59% of Republicans prioritize a candidate who agrees with their views on major issues over one who has a strong chance of beating President Biden. The poll also shows that 38% of Republicans view increasing racial, ethnic, and national diversity as a threat, which is twice as high as 4 years ago. Additionally, 78% believe that society's values on sexual orientation and gender identity are changing for the worse, and 79% think that the government is trying to do too many things that should be left to individuals and businesses. What do you think about this?
I think the reasons people give for why they vote the way they do are almost never the actual reasons, right? No one says, I voted for the better looking person, I voted for the taller person, but they're going to have a rationalization after the fact that like, oh, I like him more for the issues or I like his career.
Kind of like the Kennedy thing you were talking
about.
Right,
exactly. Yeah. So I think when people are asked what you're looking for, it's not necessarily what they're actually going to do in the voting booth, number one. Number two is, I don't think Trump has a very good shot. Pun intended, because as soon as they start talking about the Fauci stuff, especially with the base, as soon as you start talking about his staffing decisions, it's going to look pretty bad for him. And I also think that there is enough impetus on the Democratic side for him to be either kind of charged with some kind of crimes, because I think they're very...
You think so?
If I'm an attorney general and I have the possibility of prosecuting a former president, that's going to catapult me, a state attorney general, into some national fame and history books. So the incentives are very much there for Democratic Party operatives to push him as far as they can. Why wouldn't they?
Now, when you say you don't think he's got a shot, define that, meaning he has a great shot of winning the Republican primary.
No, I don't think he has. I think
general election might.
No, I don't think he has a good shot at the primary.
How could you possibly say that? He's just 60% in the CPAC.
He's going to tell you if you don't stop interrupting.
Stop interrupting me, Michael Malice.
CPAC is irrelevant, as you know, because if you last CPAC what it was at this point in 2016, I don't think Trump's name was even there. Or maybe he was because he just spoke in, number one. Number two is he's going to have an issue with fundraising because now he's become so radioactive that if I'm a big businessman and I'm giving him money, it's going to be a problem for me and my customers because all the press is going to be on top of it. There's going to be enormous amount of – there's a space now if I am Facebook or am I or CNN or Fox – for me to say no to his ads because now it's been established that this guy fomented insurrection. I don't believe that's true at all, but that is the argument. So it's easy for me as a corporation mm-hmm. who's going to be almost always left of center to be like, oh, I can't take your money because you're not a patriot, so on and so forth. So he has a lot more stacked against him now than he did even in 2016.
Okay. So let me go to a story. And then you guys can continue with this. So maybe there is an event that could take place that could help him out. Here's what it is. Donald Trump's Truth Social cut staff as his SPAC languishes. This is a Bloomberg story. Trump Media and Technology Group, the parent company of Truth Social, has laid off about half a dozen people, including senior members of its ranks, such as the chief technology officer, which, by the way, that's in the technology company.
Yeah.
That's like number one yeah. above everybody else. William B.J. Lawson.
It's like you wake up in the morning and fire your own heart.
That's tough right there. Yeah. The company
done.
That's actually a good joke, Tom. That's two in a row. Okay, so the company estimates it can fund operations through September at present spending levels. Trump media executives were once optimistic about the advertising revenue Truth Social could generate, but the reality of launching an advertising business has proved more complicated. Truth Social monthly web and desktop visits reached a high of 11.5 million in visitors in August 2022, but I've seen a decline. Holy moly. This is a real number, to 5.7 million in February. So 11.5 million to 5.7 is a little over 50%, it's 51%. So here's what I think, and I want to get your thoughts, and you guys can talk about this. This could help him out. Why? Here's why. How long has he been free to post on Facebook, Twitter, for a while, Instagram, yes. right? But he hasn't, okay? Why? He's trying to drive value to Truth Social, SPAC, money, all these people, your friends, they put up money. Here's $5 million, here's $10 million, here's $50 million, whatever the number is, right? You're raising it. SPAC is a very, very risky thing. And it's probably the worst time ever that they had a SPAC. Possibly the worst time ever when they did the SPAC at the tail end of a peak of SPACs. When all these guys were doing SPACs, we almost did a SPAC time for $400 million. You remember that? Last minute, we had a meeting. We decided we're not doing it. By the way, we were like all the way in to decision on a Zoom. Nope, we're moving on. We didn't do it.
Make a pass point for those of you listening.
Yeah.
It was a profitable company that had been profitable for many years.
Yeah, our EBITDA was a solid EBITDA.
Yeah, we weren't trying to go out and be a public company just because we were a profitable company.
And we wanted to go out.
And we wanted to go, and even we decided, no.
Everybody we called, they said, if you would have done it 5 years ago, yes, this is the worst time to do a SPAC. So if Truth goes under, now he's not fully committed to post the stuff on Truth, so he's going to be active on what? Twitter, Facebook. So maybe Truth Social going out of business could actually help his campaign.
I agree completely because the reason people like Trump and what I like the most about him is because both his foes and his friends every morning would wake up and be like, what is this asshole tweeting about now? Right? Like I could – the fact that when you had the Democrats going to a military base overseas and he pulled their permission slips and they just circled the bus around and they kind of get off the bus, that was the funniest shit ever. So him on Twitter was what got him the presidency. It was integral to him getting the nomination and getting the presidency, and it would behoove his campaign to have him back on it despite all the people who are like, take his phone away from him. That said, he hasn't been on Fox in months. The conservative media establishment has turned their backs on him. He's not like fresh like he was in 2015 when no one's seen anything like him before. I think it's going to be very hard for him to regain that fire that he had now almost a decade ago.
I can't believe you guys think this is actually be a good look for him. I hear where you're coming from, because if you want to win a national election, you're going to want to be on all the major social media platforms. You're going to want to be on Twitter. You're going
to
be on
Facebook. You have to.
You have to.
There's a reason. There's a reason he's not using it right now, because he's doubling down on his SPAC Truth Social. I would argue that the worst thing to ever happen to Donald Trump on a social media situation is Elon Musk taking over Twitter. Okay? Because Elon Musk has basically enabled Twitter to be a free speech platform. That was the whole point of Truth Social. So the whole marketing agenda was like, this is a free speech platform. Come join us. This is where it is. All it has turned out to be is a right-wing echo chamber. I don't know any moderate or even liberal that's even going close.
Or even conservative to Truth Social. Just not MAGA.
Look at, Tom just pointed at himself. He's like, I don't go there. So the last thing that Donald Trump, I mean, Donald Trump's got, you might, some may argue that he's got thin skin. Some may argue in order to make it to where he's at, he has to have thick skin. We don't know what exact type of skin he has.
It's orange.
Right? It's orange. We know that. But the last thing that he wants to be labeled is a loser.
But he,
okay? And you're about to say that he is a loser. Well, I would argue, you know, he's won a bunch more than he's lost, but lately he's been losing. But I don't think this is a good look for his brand. So what's his brand? Whether it's Trump hotels, Trump casinos, Trump steaks, Trump's waters. A lot of these businesses have failed. So now you're telling me the one business, Michael, the one business you've been working on since you lost the election, Truth Social, is now going to fail? Tell me that how that empowers him to be the president of the United States again.
Well,
I don't see it.
I don't think Truth Central, as he called it, Truth Central, is going to be central to his brand or his identity. I think he's riding on, I was the former president, I'm the one who could take on Biden, I had results in the past, I'm going to have results in the future. What MAGA people don't appreciate is that his last year in the White House, he took L after L after L after L. It was an entire year of L's. It wasn't, and the fact that if you regard the election as having been stolen, the fact that they were able to drag this carcass across the finish line, how, if he couldn't stop that in 2020 with the power of the White House behind him, how is he going to stop that in 2024 with the power of the White House against him? Now, you could argue that whoever they put up, they're going to take it. He doesn't have a chance. I can wrap my head around that argument, but that's not a good argument for Trump specifically, as opposed to someone who's won.
But one could also argue without COVID, Trump would have beat Biden. Pretty fairly.
But I think a lot of these MAGA people think that no matter what happened, it would have been stolen from him.
Yeah, well, we've seen what's happened with the Fox lawsuit with Dominion, and
I'm
realized
just saying
that
I'm not saying if you're fake. Trying to talk to Trump supporters, that's there. That's where they are.
But so, I guess, as an odds perspective, I love getting the odds. Like, this wouldn't 100% hurt him. It wouldn't 100% enable him. Like, give me the odds of why you think this would be good versus bad. I think this would be a bad look for his Truth Social SPAC to fail.
I think you were talking about two different things. You're talking about it would be an L on his business legacy and bother his ego. I think Pat was talking about something else.
Yeah.
I think both of you, Michael, respectfully, are very naive. Okay. And you have to accept it that you're very naive.
And utopian.
Here's why. Let me explain to you why.
Here we go.
Okay. Here's why. So let's just say if you were best friends, and we've known each other from high school, okay? We always hung out. We got along. We've been tight forever. We have each other's back. Okay. We're now, you know, you go through your first divorce after being married for 7 years, and we get the call. Hey, guys, you guys got a minute? Yeah, what's up? I got to talk to you guys. What's that? Mary and I are going through a divorce. Oh, shit. Sorry, bro. What's
40 grand a month?
Yeah. So kids, this, that. No, man, it's just reached a point. It's just not going to work out. We're going through a divorce. Trust me. I'm kind of dealing with it. You guys mind if we meet up somewhere tonight? Yeah, no problem. Let's go. We'll go meet up. Okay. So we feel bad for you. You, 6 months later, you meet Jackie. And you're, hey, it's Jackie. Good to meet you, Jackie. Everything good? Yeah. Well, it's tough for about 3 months, but Jackie and I met, you know, on Bumble. And, you know, it was a phenomenal. I'm like, oh, we're happy for you, man. Everything good, Michael? Yeah, yeah.
One sentence. My friend Jackie is currently in the hospital, and she's so caring, she called the cops on the nurses 2 days ago. So shout out to Jackie.
You're joking.
No, I'm not.
You want me to change your name?
No.
To not make
it's
you
funnier.
Feel uncomfortable?
It's funny. I love her. She's a great woman.
Okay, so let's go with Jackie. So you're dating Jackie, and you're happy, and then all of a sudden we come to your second wedding.
Okay.
And you're up there, you know, you're doing what you're doing. Me, Tom, and Adam walk to the side, and we're having a drink, and we say, okay, guys, over, under. What are the chances of this one working out? Adam says, I don't know, bro. I think it's 10%. Tom says, no, this one's going to work out. He loves her, and 80%. I'm like, I don't know, man. I'm kind of like at 30% mark. Okay, cool. All right, sounds good. This one, 9 months later, you give us a call. And you say, dude, this chick's crazy. She's a Karen. She's this. She's in a hospital. This is not going to work out, right? So what are you doing? I'm getting a divorce ASAP. It's just not going to work out. Great, no problem. The third time you call us for the wedding, our schedule is probably busy. Okay? What's the point here? Like, he's getting married again. Leave it alone. It's
I'm not inviting you. You never believed in me. We were friends since high school, and you're taking bets at my wedding? Fuck you.
Go back to Ivana. That shit. Fuck out of here, dude. Jackie was a good woman.
That was high school, you know, dude. Now you go through women every time the clocks change.
Okay,
come on.
So for those of you guys that are upset, saying Pat, get to the point. Here's the point. The point is, how many stories are there with stakes, with this, with that? No one gives a shit about Truth Social going out of business. Nobody does. This is not the first divorce. Let me make my point, and please don't interrupt. Okay, this is not the first, second, or third. I think statistically, it'll take us a week, 2 weeks to get over it. They'll take shots. But what are you going to say? He's filed this many bankruptcies, never worked. He's done that, never worked. This guy's going to be able to get more eyeballs if this thing goes out of business. He goes on Twitter. His first tweet, Michael, if it's the right tweet, it'll be the most liked tweet of all time, ever.
Ever.
He can create momentum if he gets back there. And quite frankly, guess what? Elon Musk is not in the business of running nonprofits. Okay.
Sure.
And he joked the other day saying, I'm officially running the biggest nonprofit of all time because right. They're not making any money. The revenues are down some ludicrous, crazy number that's down. He's going to sit there and say, dude, we kind of need the profits. We'll take memberships from Republicans, from MAGA, from whoever it is, even from anarchists. Come and buy membership. We don't care who you are. I think Truth Social going out of business is going to help his campaign. Go ahead.
You're saying two contradictory things.
Yeah.
So it will help his campaign in the long term, but in the short term, it is going to be a problem, and this is going to be an albatross around
totally
his neck.
Get it. Yeah.
And it's different from the bankruptcies in the past. No one cares about Trump stakes that happened in, what, the 80s or 90s, whatever it was. Point is, this was their mothership. This is where they went to, and now it closed down. They get kicked out of their house. They're not going to like it because people make friends on social media. You know what I mean? So it's going to be – and the thing is – yes, it doesn't really matter because it's not that big of a deal, but they're going to make it matter because even Fox is going to 24/7 be like, correct, look, another disaster from Trump.
Correct.
The TDS is going to be everywhere.
And I think one thing you got to everything comes down to sort of the news cycle. If this does fail, it'd be better to fail sooner rather than later.
And I think his spin is going to make it worse because he's not going to say, all right, we tried our best and it didn't work out. He's going to have some cockamamie excuse. And that's what they're going
to. The left-leaning Democrats, they didn't want this to happen. They wanted to see me fail.
By the way, the only recommendation I would give is I would give the strategist that are working closely with President Trump to have him realize there's a different approach you have to take as the favorite than as the underdog. He's using the same strategy as an underdog in 2015. It's not going to work. You have to take a very different approach as a favorite because he's coming across as a bully to DeSantis right now, and it's not attractive.
Yeah, but this goes back to what I always say. He's not going to change. Like, everything he's done, when have we ever seen him change?
Here's what happened.
Should he change? Should he take some counsel? Of course.
We could solve this problem in one sentence.
But he's not. Michael, you're the...
Solve it.
All he has to do is sell Truth Social to Kanye West. And the problem is solved.
Yeah, because everything he's done with Kanye West has worked out really well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like that, right? Yeah.
All his arrangements with Kanye have worked out well.
Let's go to the next one. This one is specifically for you, and I need your insight.
Yes, sir.
I need your insight on this one.
Even though I should be in bed. Yes, I will.
Here we go. By the way, Rob, can we send? What kind of mattress do you have?
I have a sponsor that's a mattress company. And
you got to be committed to them.
I like it.
Okay. All right.
I need a new twin. I can use a new twin.
Do you really?
Yeah. I have a guest room.
Do you
need a twin?
I'm trying to make it haunted.
No joke. So you want like the, you got a girl? You don't know. You got to stay.
It's a guest room. What do you mean with the girl? The girl's not in the guest room.
He just said he's got
sometimes
twins.
You,
in
when
the
you're done, you say go into guest room.
No. I say go in the Uber.
I'm thinking like you're high. Yeah. You're an anarchist. Like the wife sleeps in a different room. You're not thinking like
you don't bring the girl over the house if you're married. Are you crazy?
That's the mistress comment you made at the end. I got you. I'm following you closely. Michael, my apologies.
Jackie's a big fan of the show.
My apologies.
This is why after 9 months it's over because of you, Pat.
I apologize. Please receive
she's
it. Oh,
she's okay. Blowing up my phone right now.
All right, here we go.
She's
here
waiting
we go.
For the cops to show up.
I need
the
your insight on this one, Mr. Michael Malice.
Yes,
Republicans
sir.
Knock Ron DeSantis after Florida governor says helping Ukraine is not a vital U.S. interest. Several high-profile Republicans, including Senator Marco Rubio, Nikki Haley, Liz Cheney, and Lindsey Graham, are pushing back against Florida Governor Ron DeSantis' argument that helping Ukraine fend off Russia's invading forces isn't a vital national interest. In a questionnaire sent by Fox News host Tucker Carlson, DeSantis declared that becoming further entangled, that's a Jada Pinkett word,
yeah, that's
in a territorial dispute between Ukraine and Russia is not of vital interest to the U.S. and criticized the Biden administration for Ukraine funding Ukraine. Rubio argued that Russia's end goal is to overthrow the Ukrainian government and rule the country. And he said the war should not be compared to other conflicts or territorial disputes settled with treaties or peace agreements. Haley accused DeSantis of copying former President Donald Trump's stance on Ukraine, and Cheney accused DeSantis of weakness and forgetting the lessons of Ronald Reagan. Graham tweeted that allowing Russia to succeed in conquering Ukraine invites aggression by China and Taiwan. Thoughts?
I have a hashtag called Limbs for Liz, where people who lost their arms and legs in military service can send their prosthetics to Liz Cheney's house, because there's not enough corpses and dismembered people for her taste. She needs a second house. She needs a second condo. This woman is pure evil. And frankly, my understanding is that she was the model for Miss Piggy. If you put a picture of them side by side, you can't see the difference. I think what DeSantis is doing is he's running for the nomination, and I don't think Nikki Haley, Liz Cheney, and Lindsey Graham between them, see, that's identical. Any? Am I wrong? So
funny. That's offensive, Michael.
Why? Because it's haram. I don't think between the three of them they have any kind of clout with the Republican base. I think the Republican base has become increasingly radicalized, and I think a year from now, when you're in New Hampshire and Iowa, to still be supporting pumping more money to Ukraine is going to be extremely unpopular with the Republican base, whether that's a good thing or not.
Adam.
Yeah, I think what we're getting is a little insight into Ron DeSantis's mindset.
Yeah.
If he were to run on for presidency, which we all expect him to do, it could be as early as May, I think, is when, after the Florida government situation kind of dissipates. But he's sort of cueing to the base, hey, this is where I stand on this. And he's drawing a strong delineation between what Biden stands for, which is obviously doubling down on Ukraine. He sent
tripling, quadrupling,
all that. He sent every one of who was the latest person that he sent over to Ukraine? It was he sent Janet Yellen, and then he sent Merrick Garland, I believe, to Ukraine. Basically, he's doubling down on Ukraine. He's basically saying, this is the difference between me and Joe Biden. And if that is who he ends up running against, if he does get the nomination, he's sort of giving a heads up. This is where I stand.
And here's why this is smart. Because the big whispering campaign coming out of Trump and MAGA world is that DeSantis is a closet neocon. When he was in Congress, he's basically another, George W. Bush. And there's a big concern that he's a wolf in sheep's clothing, and that once he gets into office, he's just going to be a product of the military-industrial complex and just push for war, something that Trump, from their perspective, did not do. So this is a great way for him to get ahead of that criticism and be like, I know you're worried that I'm another war hawk like you get year after year with Republicans, but I'm really different and I'm not going to be like what you're fearing I'm going to be.
Mm-hmm. I think I agree with that to a certain extent. It's really early, and that's what every time I see these things here, I just bang around in my head. It's just like, okay, next. It's really early. Nikki Haley has her motivations. Clearly, Lindsey Graham and Liz Cheney, they've got their motivations. And I think also the classic technique, of whenever you have somebody emerging is to start picking at them. Mitt Romney didn't have the entire Republican Party behind him when he was emerging. People were picking at him. I think, it's power brokering. It's people like Nikki Haley, she's competing with him. She's a competitor. Just call it. She's competing for the Republican nomination. So she's a hard-nosed competitor. So we're not surprised about her.
Yeah.
Check. And everybody else has got their motivations. And he is the emerging front runner. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people are trying to shift the power where they want it to be.
You know, one of the things that I think you is a sign of a guy that's got the chances of winning is you have to take a hard position and get a ton of backlash and still stand firm. And then the market says, wow, good for him. And then the argument creates momentum, kind of like what you're doing, right? So think about like your argument of, no, let me tell you, here's a da-da-da-da. So okay, well, maybe he's got a point. Now you got to have your tipping point for that argument to really go.
Correct.
But I think DeSantis has to take this position. I think it favors him. Now, whether people like it or not, it is what it is. There's a lot of people right now that are kind of sitting there that were all pro-Ukraine. Let's help these guys out. Change the flag colors on my Twitter profile now. It's like, I don't know about all this money that we're spending. and were experienced in America. So I think it could help them out position-wise. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure the level of credibility with the other guys. You don't want to be the group of 18 people that disagree with the one guy.
Right, because you had to market differentiate. Like, why am I buying RC Cola? Because I'm cheaper. There's got to be something that distinguishes
me. RC Cola is also better, though.
Okay, yeah. There's got to be something. I'm a Dr. Pepper guy. There's got to be something that distinguishes me from the from the other brands. And I think it's this is the most extreme time in our lifetime where there is a disconnect between a party and its base, specifically between the Republican Party and the Republican base. I don't think we've ever seen anything like it, the animus that the Republican base has towards the Republican Party.
Can I say one more thing about this?
Do that, and then I want to go to this next story.
Just real quick, because they keep using the word of national interest. This is not, DeSantis says specifically, this is helping Ukraine does not fend off invading forces isn't of national interest. One could argue, yes, this is not of national interest, but this is of our international interest,
or preference,
right?
Yeah.
So obviously NATO is an international alliance that is there to protect typically Europe,
specifically
against Russia's invasion. And one could argue that, all right, if we allow this to happen, what's next? What's the slippery slope that happens with Poland or Finland? And we've seen that Finland and Norway or whoever it is just recently been introduced to NATO. And then you have here is Lindsey Graham even tweeting that allowing Russia to succeed in conquering Ukraine, speaking of slippery slope, now invites China to invade Taiwan. So where does it end if U.S. doesn't draw the line on these types of situations?
But then where does it end? Because at a certain point, then China is going to even more so be on Russia's side. So if you want to play brinksmanship, it's not going to be like the good guys always win if you're assuming that we're the good guys, as we just demonstrate in Afghanistan.
Yeah, well, no, I completely understand on that. But at the end of the day, one can say that this is what I said a couple weeks ago. I think this is a vital U.S. interest to stand pat on what we believe in, democracy. You can't just invade countries. I think that's something that we should, whether it's soft power, hard power, throwing money on it, that we should stand behind.
Are you willing to send troops?
Not whatsoever. The one that you could always argue is how much money. How much money can we be spending? Is it, where do we draw the line on that? Right now we're at $100 billion. Are we willing to commit another $100 billion? How about $1 trillion? We spent, what, $1 trillion in Afghanistan, if not more? We spent $4 trillion fucking dollars in Iraq. So one could argue, hey, the money just doesn't make sense whatsoever. But standing firm on what we believe in, I think there's no amount of money that we can put behind that.
Would you regard it as somehow wrong if Putin started targeting American resources? Like if he started bombing American bases?
Well, now he's in...
Just somewhere. Would you regard that as somehow illegitimate?
What do you mean by illegitimate?
Is that an
act of war? Then yes.
But the point being, like, would you be surprised? At a certain point, if you're going to keep funding his opponent, we start becoming parties to this war ourselves.
No question about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're playing a very dangerous game where it's easy to be like, we're the good guys, we're for democracy, you're not going to do it, but we're not going to send troops. Yeah. At a certain point, he's like, fuck you.
Yeah,
and that's going to be very. That's something I'm terrified of.
Totally understand, and that's a great argument. But at the other end of the spectrum is, all right, do we just allow Putin to do whatever he wants with no consequences, and we don't step up? We're America. I mean, like, the world goes as America sort of goes. Like, if we don't step up, if we don't lead, who leads then? China, Russia, Iran?
I
we need to stand for something here.
I hear what you're saying, but at a certain point, Thatcher very famously said the problem with socialism is eventually run out of other people's money. We have limited resources. And this idea that we can fund wars everywhere across the world in perpetuity, wherever so-called democracy is threatened, I think that is the utopian perspective. And at a certain point, we have to be like, all right, this sucks. We're like, North Korea is a great example, you know. Mm-hmm. If I had my druthers and talk about utopian, if I had a magic wand, I would liberate the North Korean people. We can't do that because their military and so on and many other China has their backing. So yes, I like the idea of protecting liberalism in whatever form it takes throughout the world. But at a certain point, we're making ourselves the targets and we're going to have other 9/11s.
Yeah, I agree. And that's essentially my point, is that what amount of money are we willing to commit to this? I think... Speeches, soft power, saying what we believe in, that doesn't cost anything. And I think that's what we should be doing. And I think it's fully in our right to argue, hey, this is, where else could this money be used? I think that we need to stand for what we believe in, and not invading sovereign nations, I think, is sort of tantamount to democracy.
But what does stand for what we believe in mean? That can mean anything up to boots on the ground. If I'm not sending troops, am I really standing for what I believe in? If I'm not, you know, putting lives in risk, or I'm just talking out of my ass at that point, right?
You're saying that you have to send troops or send
if I really want to stand for what I believe in, then there's no price too high. The heavens fall.
Are you going to the speech he gave about you Americans will need to send their sons and daughters?
No, I'm just going to his Zelensky point that, like, look, listen, if we have to stand up for what we let's make Putin, it makes it even easier. If it's like Putin's like a Hitler figure, like really just pure evil, and the Ukrainians are
which
all
he's
angels.
Not, and that's part of
he's
the
not.
Problem.
No, but the point
people
is,
are kind
like,
of labeling that.
Are we
not.
Are you comfortable always allocating, no matter how many resources we have, to always fighting dictators? And at a certain point, the answer is we can't. We at a certain point, we're going to run out of military. We're going to run out of weaponry. We're going to run out of people's patience too, and that's the big problem.
I agree with you. I'm saying that.
I'm not saying we're arguing.
I know, but money shouldn't be the only situation that we're looking at. I agree. We can't just go down the rabbit hole of another Afghanistan of trillions in Iraq.
Let's go to the next story. DeSantis administration revokes Hyatt Regency Miami alcohol license after it hosted a drag queen Christmas. This is an insider story. The DeSantis administration is revoking their license after the party with minors present in the audience. The state's business department accused the Miami venue of several violations, including a prohibition of how do you pronounce that word? Lascivious. Sexual exhibition before people younger than 16, the department said performers were wearing sexually suggesting clothing and prosthetic female genitalia, as well as simulating masturbation. Republican Governor DeSantis of Florida supported the license revocation, and his press secretary said that sexually explicit content is not appropriate to display to children, and doing so violates Florida law. Equality Florida and LGBTQ rights organization said that DeSantis was selectively weaponizing state agencies against businesses to target drag performances, saying such decisions should be left to the parents.
Yeah, so the corporate press won't discuss what the content of these shows are. It's literally two male dancers in their like Speedos humping each other on stage. And if you look up Jimbo Tits in a Box, Jimbo's one of these queens. I'm a big fan because drag is transgressive and it's good art for adults. But he's performing with the song's literally called Tits in a Box, with dancing around with his big tits in a box. And there's kids there who are like 5, 6, or 7. And one of the queens were addressing the children in the audience as well. So yeah, if you look at this is not appropriate for children, but it's perfectly appropriate as adult risque entertainment.
No doubt. But here's my question. 5, 6, 7-year-olds aren't just getting in an Uber and showing up by themselves.
It's the white
Why are the parents taking them there?
Because white liberal moms want to show their dad how progressive they are, and they put a man in makeup and they think it's the second coming.
So then here's the question.
This is not appropriate for children, although it's a hilarious song.
But isn't it the parents' decision as to what's appropriate for their kids or not? Yeah, I would never take my nephew, to anything like this. But if Karen wants to take her daughter to this event, that's her decision. Why would the government step in and tell you what you can and can't do with your children?
You be
that's
fine
sort of
with
antithetical to what we stand
Rob,
for.
Rob, honestly, you can stop it. It's totally
fine. Yeah, Robert, you're getting a little excited.
Would you be fine with Karen taking her kids to a bar or to a dispensary?
Well, being you can't be under 21.
Right
to be in a bar.
But that's what DeSantis is trying to do. He's saying you can't be under, I think it was 18, to a show like this.
I don't know. I thought the whole premise of the Republican Party was limited government and being able to do what you want to do. Again, I'm not defending this whatsoever. I think it's fucking absurd. It used to be.
No, it never
but
was.
Isn't
I don't know about
of
that.
Limited
I
government?
You can call 21 for alcohol and things like that. I don't think you can call
that's a non sequitur too.
Limited government. Yeah. You're right, but I don't think that one really applies here.
You're telling me that the Republicans don't stand for limited government
and
getting out of your life in your bedroom?
Like that.
No, they don't.
They don't?
No, they don't.
But that was the whole premise.
No.
Where am I getting that?
Keep going where you're going. Stay on the because that is the argument. The argument of some people on the left will be, isn't the right, the freedom of speech and not censorship, why are they censoring this? Your argument is, well, this is an aid. Same thing with a dispensary. Can Karen take their kid to a dispensary and buy? So are you saying Is there a law for age right now where this is illegal? Was there a law broken for this?
No, I'm not familiar with exactly this specific case.
Can you find out if a law was broken?
My point being, it is not at all crazy to me that there are mechanisms in place where children are not exposed to sexually explicit material. Yeah. I think there's a lot of historical precedent and cultural precedent.
They used the phrase violation and they were stating an age. So I assume that the DeSantis administration was acting on something that was precedent, I'm assuming.
Go back up. The business has 21 days. What? Go back up? All the way up? Yeah. The business has 21 days to request a hearing. Beth, a spokeswoman for the department, told Insider, Arizona General hotel liquor license still in effect, and said that the hotel was reviewing the complaint. Third-party operator manages the night center's programming and ticketing while the hotel... A third-party operator manages the night center's programming and ticketing while the hotel provides food and beverages concessions. Republican governor said widely considered to be an amounting presidential... Sexually... Yeah, what I want to know is what law was broken, okay? Mm-hmm. Because these are two different conversations. What law was broken?
I think it's more like if you're going to be serving alcohol, because he took the liquor license. He didn't put anyone in jail. So I think the premise is if you're going to have a liquor license establishment, you're not allowed to have underage people.
But that's not true, though, because when I go to Armenian weddings, trust me, there's a lot of liquor and there's plenty of kids around.
But maybe those laws aren't being enforced in those situations. Okay. But one more to your point. Yeah. We could all wrap our heads around kids not being able to go to strip clubs or to Chippendales, right? Doesn't mean they shouldn't exist. They should be banned. So I think this is just kind of more of the same, but in a gay context.
Yeah. And again, I'm not, I would never take my nephew to anything like this. That's not for me, but I'm just giving the counter argument where it's like, okay, what's acceptable and not. So if you go back to that video, it's like, where do you draw the line? Like, let's say kids want to go see a clown or you want to go see a magician. Right?
Go back up. The First Amendment. Yeah, right there. Fundamental tenet of First Amendment is that the government should not punish people simply because it disapproves of the content of their speech. Yet the decision will harm a business simply because it supported speech of government, speech the government doesn't like.
Right.
Legislation for Republican Assembly, including Florida, has targeted drag performances with, you know, this year Tennessee becomes the first to ban adult performances, including drag. Okay, but that's where I'm going with it. Mm-hmm. Where I'm going with it is the following. Here's where I'm going with it. Great. If you want to take the license away, rather than taking the license away, do what Tennessee does. Ban adult performances, including drag, from public spaces such as parks and schools. If you want to do that with kids being present, make that a law. But if it's not a law, they didn't break a law. If they did break a law and you revoke their license, fine, it's a law. I don't know if it's a law or not. If it's not and you do it, then you give an argument to the other side to come in and say, well, aren't you doing this? Aren't you doing that? Oh, I thought you were for not censorship, all this other stuff. First of all, yesterday I'm talking to Frank from Gays Against Groomers. I don't know if you're familiar with Gays Against Groomers.
Yes.
They do a very good job. And Frank and I were trying to get a time. He's the executive director to get him on the podcast. I'm looking forward to having the conversation with him for him to give his perspective on how he feels about this. These guys do a very good job, and I want to learn more about them. You know, if it is a law, then you can prevent the kid. You can enforce it. If it's not, parents are uncomfortable with, you know, drag queens being shown to kids. But then your argument is, well, shouldn't the parent have the decision? The kid didn't get an Uber, go there. It's the parent's decision. You want to take your kid and watch a scary movie or something? You took the risk. It says rated R, except with what? Parental guidance or PG-13. But if you got parental guidance, whatever, you can go watch the movie. The parent took the risk. This is a form of... That is kind of what you're saying.
But I think the argument, this is more like X, though.
It's what?
It's more like rated X, where you can't take a kid to porno.
I don't think it's soft porn, because I don't think there's anything, I don't think it's soft. I think this would probably be considered rated R. Even NC-17 is when they show, you know, two getting naked and, you know. But I think this is an R thing that the parent took the risk. Regardless of it, trust me when I tell you this. DeSantis taking the position, the people who are saying, I can't believe this, he was never going to get their vote anyway. Yeah. So he's not losing or gaining anybody there. But the people that were sitting there that were for him, who are parents with kids, they're like, dude, I don't care whether it is or it's not. I like the fact that it's defending something like this. He got those people that will support him, which is that's right. The vote you want anyways.
And this is, I mean, look, it's no secret that DeSantis has his whole agenda is the war on the woke. This Florida's where woke comes to die. DeSantis is basically revealing his playbook for 2024, okay? Anything the trans, I'm out on that. Against it. Boom. Ukraine, we're getting out of there. He's revealing what he stands for, and he's delineating between himself with Biden, with Trump, and he's just He's showing us who he is. And by the way, I don't think many people would agree that they want young kids around trans stuff. I think there's going to be over 50% majority that are going to support this. I think my only question is, isn't it up to the parents to make that decision, not the government?
Well, I think it depends on how comfortable you are with what kids are being allowed to see. Because at a certain point, everyone would agree that if you're giving a kid like drugs or alcohol, we're going to take that kid away from the parent. On the other hand, if they're just showing them, you know, Always Sunny in Philadelphia, very few people are, even though it's not appropriate for kids.
Amazing show.
Yes, very few people are going to say, all right, like, let's call CPS.
Isn't that a libertarian argument? That's the libertarian argument, no?
I'm just, for the most perspective. So the question is, what are you comfortable with? Maybe it's different on a state-by-state basis. The difference is, well, you're right that a majority of people aren't for the trans stuff with kids, but this is constantly being portrayed in the corporate press as just simply anti-LGBT. They're not acknowledging or addressing the content of these shows. It's not a guy in a dress singing some nice song and it's nice wholesome family entertainment. It's explicitly sexually suggestive performances and sexually explicit material. And that is very different from how, if you watch The View, you're going to perceive what's happening.
Yeah. By the way, again, for me, if you're campaigning, you have to take some risks.
Yes.
And DeSantis is taking the right risks. Watch two conversations he's in, which is exactly what you need to do if you want to create momentum. Mm-hmm. One, you got Republicans to vote against you and disagree with you. Rubio, Haley, Cheney, Ukraine, phenomenal. You have one position. That's a risk. The other one, hey, we're doing this to these guys. That's a risk. Who am I gaining? The millions of people that are also asking, why are we sending all this money to Ukraine while we have a bank going out of business here? Why are we having our kids be exposed to transgender? I'm sorry, I'm not good with this. So I think he's taking the right risks. There is risks. He has to take it. If I ask you right now, what's Nikki Haley's position? Give it to me. Give me one risk Nikki Haley's taking. What's her position? Give me one risk Marco Rubio's taking. What's his position? Give me one risk Liz Cheney's taking. What's her position? The only risk Liz Cheney took is what? After the comments being made about her father, he turned against January 6th. That was a risk she took because she'll never get MAGA. But Liz Cheney is better off today becoming a Democrat than staying a rhino Republican. Yeah. I don't know where you put her, where she's at. So
yeah,
the risk she took, that is also a risk, but that's a big risk. They thought Lincoln Project was going to be bigger than it actually ended up becoming.
Well, not necessarily. Right. I think,
and she got crushed in her election. She didn't win. The risk-reward did not work out for her.
It kind of did because we all know her name. She's very well positioned to get a book deal, to be a pundit.
If that's what you're solving. Yeah. You're right.
If she's solving for being a congresswoman, then it was a horrible risk.
Yeah, but I mean, she's got the Cheney money, Cheney name. She has other paths to power.
If she wants to get her show on MSNBC, she just signed that deal, locked in.
Exactly.
I would like to do
The View.
I would like to do two business stories, and then we wrap up, if that's okay with you guys. Tom, Mark Zuckerberg on how to run a company in 2023. This is a Wall Street Journal story. Mark Zuckerberg has announced an update vision for the company in a year of efficiency focused on cutting costs and improving productivity. This comes after a year of slow growth and economic uncertainty. The company plans to cut 10,000 jobs over multiple rounds of layoffs while leaving an additional 5,000 open positions unfilled. It will eliminate middle management and flatten its corporate hierarchy by converting many managers into employees with no supervisory responsibilities. In other words, an anarchy. Low priority projects will be canceled and internal tools will be strengthened to help software engineers write code faster. The company will also pause new remote work applications and request to transfer to another office through the first half of the year, as some employees have performed better in person. However, Meta is committed to allowing both remote and hybrid work. Tom, thoughts?
I found this to be like the death of a thousand cuts.
Yeah.
He's pouring money into this hole called the Ukraine war. I mean, the metaverse. And so he's doing that. And then they've laid off some people. Now, wait a minute. The year of efficiency, it's just a year of job cuts. He's trying to align what was this bloated cost with the economic reality, the revenue they're bringing in, cutting 10,000 jobs and closing 5,000 open jobs. He's showing that this company has been completely caught out, and now he's having to walk back and reoptimize
and he's not getting any, number one. And the reason they're having to do that, he's not getting any traction on the metaverse. But actually, they had a pretty good Q4 that showed signs of light, that with the right number of folks, they still are a volcano of ad money, which is good. But the humorous part for me is pausing new remote work applications. So let's read that. Pause new remote work applications. No one is getting permission to work remote anymore. And then some employees that perform better in person. And then to quell the revolt before it happens. However, we're committed to allowing both remote and hybrid work. So I think Mark is sort of an enigma wrapped in a contradiction these days.
Michael.
I don't know that. Listen, I'm no Mark Zuckerberg. He knows his business and his company infinitely better than I do. But from my understanding of social media and social media dynamics, I don't know how you turn the ship around. Because once some internet social media site is regarded as kind of outdated or, you know, grandma, it becomes a lot harder to get the kids, which are what you, kind of like cigarettes, right? You want that young generation to kind of keep it going, to sustain it. I haven't been on Facebook in a couple of years. I know for a lot, I don't.
No joke.
No. It's, if you go to.
Do you use Instagram or no?
I use Instagram, okay. Facebook.com/MichaelMiles. You could see my last post a couple of years ago. It hasn't hurt my.
Why haven't you though? What's your reason?
It drove me crazy that he changed it so I couldn't see everyone's updates in a reverse chronological order, that you're going to curate my feed for me. It's like, this isn't what I want. I want to see everyone who I follow. You'll see all their posts.
How many fans do you have on Facebook right now?
I have no idea. I'm sure thousands.
Can you see the number?
Yep, 1140.
Well, you don't have a fan page. That's just your personal. Do you have a fan page or no?
No, I don't have a fan page.
Michael, I think you ought to consider having a fan page. Let somebody monitor it. Not even you doing it. Have somebody add your clips. Only reason I'm saying this, if it's not important, don't do it. Right. You are a brand that could generate an additional 10 to 20 a month off of Facebook.
Okay.
If it's not, it's important to you, don't worry about it. But you'll blow up on Facebook, and the monetization is actually working effectively. But good point to say, who's even using that, right? That's kind of what you're
right,
saying.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And it's certainly not like something that's regarded as a cutting edge or hip or anything like that. It's
so
really,
how do you do that?
It's very hard.
Yeah, how do you do that? Tom, the question becomes, he makes a good point. How do you make it cool again, right? Because to me, you know how sometimes a parent screwed up with the kids and they try to win the kids over and they lower the standards. Well, guys, moving forward, you don't have to make your bet. Thank you that you didn't improve your situation here, right? Hey, moving forward, babe, in our relationship, I will be more, XYZ. No, you didn't make yourself more attractive. I think there needs to be a vision that's attractive to get a new market. Facebook is officially the company that buys companies right before they're about to blow up, and that's the brand.
Yep.
And you've talked about that before, but how do you make Facebook cool again? That's the trillion-dollar question.
It's like the Old Spice
commercial.
I don't
think you can, because you know those little, they're on T-shirts and everywhere, and it shows evolution where you have the primate, and then he slowly starts to stand up, and then he's walking. Well, basically, you can look at social media like that, and you've got AOL, then you got Friendster, then you got MySpace, and you got Facebook. I don't think you go back. I think once a new generation decides that is the archaic, social media has proven. Let me say that as proven that once a generation turns its back on the prior and goes to forward, that's it. I mean, ask the people at Snapchat who are sitting there every morning at church praying for TikTok to be shut down in the United States so that they have a chance to be rejuvenated. Yeah. I don't think you turn it around, Pat. And that's why you're hearing things like we're going to the. I think Mark knows it. And that's why he doubled down on the metaverse. Call it dumb, call it smart, call it what you will, but he's doubling down because he needs a new play. And now they're coming out and saying, we're going to make this open format, messaging platform with interrelated relevance to the messages. Okay, so why don't you just say you're trying to make a Twitter competitor at some point, and that's what you're working on in the back room. I don't think you can turn back the clock.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think you can. I think you can, and I think you believe you can as well. But I think the gift, Tom, the gift of doing that, Mark doesn't have. Okay, just like you know what Truth Social needs. First of all, they need a Trump. They needed Elon to not buy Twitter. That screwed up Truth Social. The day he bought Twitter, it's over with. Right, that was game over.
Yep, sure.
But take Sheryl Sandberg outside of Facebook. What's Facebook? Nothing. Look at the names I'm about to tell you. Take Sheryl Sandberg out. It doesn't have the valuation it has. Number two. Who's the guy that came from Napster? What was his name? The Napster
Sean
guy.
Parker.
Take Sean Parker out. What's the vision? Sean Parker was the vision. Okay, Sheryl Sandberg was the money ads. The twins, whatever the
Winklevoss.
Those guys were the idea. Zuck is an operator and an executor and a driver. That's what he'll do. Mm-hmm. But he's not that guy. So I think he needs to find the next, give you a perfect idea. Most people, when you think about Fox News, you ask the average person Fox News, who's the founder of Fox News? They're going to think the guy that's the founder of Fox News is who?
Rupert Murdoch.
No, no. If you ask
Roger Ailes.
They have no idea.
They have no idea.
They have no idea.
They have no idea. The guy's Australian with an Australian accent. Rupert Murdoch is an Australian guy with an Australian accent. What took Fox to be a behemoth was a guy named Roger Ailes.
Correct.
Okay. You take Roger Ailes out, it's not going to happen. The best thing Zuck could do right now, is stop coming up with ideas. It's not your strength. Go find the biggest, badass, innovator, creative that wants to prove a point. Give him a fat salary with a big upside. Let them come in. Rather than coming up with ideas, go find your Roger Ailes. Go find your next Sandberg. Go find your next recruit. This is recruiting season. I think the approach he's taking is not going to work out because he's not a vision guy. He's an executor. And by the way, Zucks are very, very hard to find. Very, very hard to find. There's a reason why he's worth what he's worth. But he can go find the other guys. Mm-hmm. They're out there.
I don't know a single person, and obviously that's a very bad metric for saying something like this, but I just want to put that caveat, who's on the metaverse or spends time there.
Exactly.
And a lot of my friends are big influencers in very many fields. If I don't have one data point to the contrary, that says something.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I may be wrong. All I'm saying is go recruit a guy like that. You have plenty of money and attractive platform to give it to somebody. And by the way, that guy becomes a savior. Just 20 years ago, not even 20 years ago, 1976, when did Apple get started? 72 or 76? It's what year did Apple get started? 1970 what? What year does it say? 76.
April 1st, okay. 1976.
April Fools, 1976. Pretty wild. So they get started 76. And an accidental millionaire book comes out, trashing jobs, right? And then what happens to him? He gets fired. And then Apple's about to die. Scully, the guy that he brings from Pepsi, ends up firing him, right? Jobs goes to Home Fries, what do you call it? Pixar. And he sells Pixar to who? Disney. Then Apple comes in.
He starts working Next Computer with Ross Perot.
Yes. So then they come in. Then they bring him back. And then, boom, it takes off. I think Facebook needs to go find recruited talent. By the way, watch what happened here yesterday. This is 16 hours ago. U.S. threatens ban if TikTok Chinese owner don't sell stakes. Okay, this is all over the place. Axios wrote it. NBC wrote it. They wrote it. This isn't something that was started by Biden. Trump proposed this, and I don't know if you remember at one point, there's a bunch of people that were going to buy it. You know, I don't know what the company. Twitter was, I think, one. There was a couple companies that were going to buy this guy. TikTok. I want to say it's not a bad buy but for Facebook, but I don't think it's a good buy for Facebook because they already got it. It's Instagram. I think this is a very good buy if Elon buys TikTok.
Oh, well, I don't think it matters who owns TikTok. I think it matters what TikTok is connected to. And
if Elon buys it, it'll be TikTok files and you'll see everything. If they force...
So he would pull it out of there.
Tom, 100%.
Pull out the China 100. Code.
Look at what Vivek Ramaswamy's campaign is right now. You know what he wants to do? Did you hear what he said yesterday?
No. Actually,
he said a lot of things.
Can you go to Twitter real quick? Here's what he said yesterday, which I found very interesting. So you know what Vivek wants to do? Here's what Vivek wants to do. What Vivek tweeted yesterday, this is the kind of stuff that your life is on the line. So let me find this tweet here, what he said. He says, if you vote me in, he wants to do... to the U.S. government, what Twitter Elon Musk did with Twitter files. Huh. I don't know if you know what I'm saying.
They'd put him 6 feet under in 2 seconds.
Of course they would. Came out and he says, "I will be exposing the FBI files, the DIS files." It's a very utopian idea to have.
I don't know. He better not walk through the kitchen at the Ambassador Hotel.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
Look, he's got guts. He's got audacity. And I don't even mind. Like, right there. Just as Elon Musk did at Twitter, as president, I will release the state action files from the federal government, exposing every instance where the feds pressured companies to take constitutionally prohibited actions. I like this. This is good. But if Elon buys TikTok, combine TikTok and Twitter, I don't know. There's something attractive about that. But will Biden and his camp allow TikTok to be sold to Elon? You know that's not going to be happening. They're going to get in the way.
Well, whoever buys it has to untangle it from all that.
Yes.
That word keeps reappearing.
The entanglement
word.
Yeah,
it's just like it's Chris Rock's favorite word right now. So, anyways, I don't know what's going to happen there, but that was the one story. Tom, I'll do the mortgage story, and I'll give that one to you, and we'll wrap up. So, page 8, let's see here. Mortgage demand rises despite volatile interest rates. This is a CNBC story. Mortgage demand increased for the second week in a row, with the total application volume rising by 6.5% compared to the previous week. According to Mortgage Bankers Association, despite mortgage rates being higher, mortgage applications to purchase a home increased by 7% for the week. And homeowners, home buyers concerned rates will continue to rise. However, applications to refinance a home were 74% lower than a year ago. It's a big number. The average contract rate for 30-year fixed mortgage with conforming loan balances decreased to 6.71% from 6.79. That's not a big number. But rates were largely higher for most of the week before dropping sharply on Friday due to news of Silicon Valley Bank failure. So is this like, Tom, just a small little movement here? Is this like, you know, what do you think this is?
Yeah, this is a blip. And I dove into this because I saw the headline and I'm like, what the hell? You know, and to find out what it is. And this was CNBC making a headline where there really isn't one. And I dove into the stuff Diana Olav was talking about. And what happened was there is always buyers right on the edge. Even in a bad market, there's a percent of buyers that are right on the edge.
Yeah.
And when they saw the madness happening with SVB and they hear, you know, the week prior is what really drove it. It really wasn't SVB. It was driven the week prior when everyone was trying to talk Powell, you know, buddy, you don't need to do 25. You need to do 50. And it was Larry Summers on the weekend and all the weekend news shows. Larry Summers says he really needs to put a half a point on this, not just a quarter point. People on the edge were reacting to that, saying, well, if we're going to do it now, we better do it now. Take 6.71. Otherwise, it's going to be 7. This wasn't the market moving back to buy houses. This is people on the edge, Pat. It's on a blip. They jumped in. They locked at 6.71, and they bought some houses. And also, there was an increase in sale of newly built homes in that last week, which is temporary because you know what that was? If you're a home builder like Toll Brothers or Lanier, Pat, what can you always do? You can use part of the home price to arbitrage the rate. Tell you what, you go get the rate, and what I'll do is I'll pay 1 point. So instead of 6.75, you'll get 6.25. And so home builders pushed a little blip on that too. But this is a blip. This is not a change in the mortgage market, according to everything that I dove into.
I'm not particularly informed on this specific issue, but the housing market has been historically kind of boom and bust. I know Austin specifically, the rates for renting and for home ownership went through the roof in the last couple of years. Now they seem to kind of, if you look at Zillow, which I kind of do regularly, all the home prices have an arrow going down. So the market is kind of correcting itself. But again, the mortgages and banks are obviously so extremely interconnected that if banks start failing, this is going to have some kind of cascading effect.
Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering what the mortgage brokers are telling their potential clients right
question.
Now. Because in any sale, it comes down to what? Urgency and scarcity,
right?
So, hey, you know, the rates just dropped. They're not going to drop anytime soon. Yeah. You see what Powell's doing out there. Their rates are expected to go up. You're lucky if you get it at 6.5 at this point.
That's a great point.
That's a great
point. I know, hey, you know, we can't go back to a year ago where you could have got 3.5.
Right.
You should have chose then. Now we're at 6.5. It could be 7.5 next year. Time to go.
Inflation around the corner, too.
I read it was a blip, and that's exactly, if I was a mortgage broker, what I'd be saying to people. We don't know where this is going to go, but it doesn't look good. You've been right on the edge here. Why don't you pull the trigger on the home? Yep. Let's get you locked in.
Yeah, but you know, if I'm that guy that was looking to buy a house a year ago and I missed the rush and I could have gotten it 3.5, now you're trying to sell me on 6.5. Yeah, that's an uncomfortable situation.
Were you going to say something?
No, I completely agree. It's trying to be Nostradamus here.
Gang, this has been a blast. Two things. One, go order the book, The White Pill. Came out December 1st, 5 stars by Michael Malice. Let's put the link below in the description as well as the chat for people to go pick up. Again, go pick up the book, White Pill, Michael Malice, A Tale of Good and Evil. I got a surprise gift as well for you. It just arrived, your gift, 2 days ago. And I, rather than doing it on your birthday, you were out of town. I want to do it right now before it's too late. And I know your birthday was a minute ago, but it just arrived. Can we open the door and get this gift for this guy?
What is happening?
Right, I think you're going to like it. I hope you like it. This is a...
what is happening?
It's a gift. Dude, put it behind him so at least the audience can see. Hopefully he likes this gift.
Just pull that. Oh, bro, are you freaking kidding
me? It up. Open it up. Open it up. Let's see if you like this gift or not.
It's my birthday today.
We ordered a bed for your wife.
All right, let's see. So the reason why I got you this gift is for obvious reasons. Yeah. Okay? So this is a Isaiah Thomas autographed jersey.
Wow.
For Adam Sauce, because Adam grew up, your pops, Detroit. Happy birthday, buddy.
That's the bad boy.
Beautiful that display is.
This is such a sick gift. Isaiah Thomas. Everyone was a Michael Jordan guy. Everyone was a Larry Bird guy. Magic. I was always Isaiah.
I like the hipster aspect of that.
Yeah, thank you. This is.
I appreciate that.
What's crazy, I only own one other jersey, and it's an Isaiah Thomas jersey, but it's not framed.
Now you've got an autograph frame. Yeah. Put it up in your bed.
Isaiah, if you ever see this, Zeke.
Put it over your bed.
And put it over your bed.
So cool.
Okay. All right. Anyways, we had a blast. Michael, once again, thanks for coming out. I know it was too early for you, but we had a good time. Hopefully we woke you up, and I know you woke a lot of us up as well.
Florida's where Wilk goes to die, apparently.
Sure. Well played.
It used to, but it's changed. Anyways, gang, have a great weekend, and we will do this again next week. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.